Blog Talk Radio.
Don't tell me when something is beautiful, and don't tell me how to talk to my friend. Your favorite song. Tell me the names of the lovers you had before I came along. Don't put your arms around me. Don't hold me tight. Cause I could get into your vision of
Oh, calm down, people.
That's the waterworks.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, keep going, keep going. Oh, they really cut off quickly, that audience. Like,
yeah.
They just go dead.
Right.
They just go dead. There was a Mick Jagger, Visions of Paradise. Mick, Mick unfortunately can't stick around to talk, but that was good to have him. Good to have him. Thanks for being here, Mick.
Oh.
We got a pretty big show today in my mind. We haven't been doing a ton of Saturday shows. We're usually doing a Monday from the Coney Dog on 8873 West Sunset, Mike Binder's joint. But I wanted to do today's show because I think we have a very special guest. Our guest is Greg Barson, who he directed Method to the Madness, which is a documentary about Jerry Lewis. He spent 3 years with Jerry. And I grew up watching Jerry Lewis films. Yeah. I mean, my grandpa, we've talked about on the show before, I spent a lot of time with my grandparents.
Uh-huh.
And my grandpa just had old movies, you know, and Steven Seagal flicks. That was it. It was like Seagal flicks, or you can watch some old stuff.
Jesus.
And the old stuff was stuff like Jerry Lewis movies, you know, and Dean Martin. And so I watched a lot of Jerry movies growing up, and I think it's played an impact on my career. And I think Jerry's comedy has played an impact on our careers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very interested in doing this interview. Now, that being said, let's talk about some other things real quickly.
Yeah, so Steven Seagal movies were the yes. only modern movies that he had.
Yeah, Seagal and Chuck Norris.
Okay.
He was in a Chuck Norris flicks.
Okay.
Old Italian man, you know, off the boat, 100%. And he just liked really bad action movies.
And Fred Astaire.
Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Bing Crosby, Jerry Lewis,
Bob Hope.
Dean Martin. Loved Bob Hope. He loved Bob
Hope. Henry Fonda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
John
what he was
Wayne.
Into.
Okay.
I played that Mick Jagger song because you and I had a very interesting conversation about solo Mick Jagger last night.
Yeah, we did.
And I was hoping we could kind of talk a little bit about it.
Right.
Because I think we may be the only people that have ever talked about solo Mick Jagger and what it means. And
right.
So,
well, no, it's one thing to talk yeah. about it.
By the way, Matthew Aaron here, www.thematthewaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook. I'm sitting here with my co-host.
Lee Capreas, hello. It's another thing entirely to internalize that discussion and think, man, this guy does not get along.
Yeah,
relationship.
Yeah, we got deep about Mick Jagger yesterday.
All right.
I think we could have made good shrinks for Mick.
I think so. Well, no, but like, so you take the Rolling Stones music, and the whole premise of it is just like, hey, man, take that tie out of your hair, let your hair down, and dance.
Yeah, yeah. The whole That's point of Rolling Stones is
have a good time.
Have a good time, get laid,
right.
whatever. Mm-hmm. Then Mick's solo music is all about what happens after that.
Right.
The downfall of getting laid,
yeah.
falling in love.
Look,
you know,
baby,
yeah.
I just met you, but this isn't going
to
work out.
Yeah, all mixed music. I mean, we listened to like, and I had every album ever and every song ever, and I had on shuffle.
Yeah.
And like 10 songs in a row were about some dame who broke his heart.
Right.
And Mick was just like, don't call me. I don't want to hear from you.
It sounded like Roy Orbison lyrics, only really negative.
Yeah, yeah. Like Mick obviously is a sensitive guy. He has a heart, man.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like it being broke.
What was funny is that all those things suggested that he gets dumped, that yes. he's the one being dumped.
That was the best part of this conversation.
Who's dumping
yeah.
Mick?
Yeah, we were joking around. Like, does she walk up to him and go, Mick?
Mick.
I met a plumber.
Uh-huh.
His name's Mike. He's great. You'd like him a lot. You'd like him a lot.
I met this guy. His name's Chester.
Yeah.
He works. He volunteers with wounded animals. I appreciate your taking me anywhere I want to go, buying me whatever I could desire,
yeah.
satisfying my every need in any way, and just being the most fun of any
And
person.
My point was this
but,
music's like, at what point is he like, damn it? I'm Mick Jagger. Who are you?
Right.
Why are you're dumping Mick Jagger?
Right.
Do you know who I am? Do you know who I think I am?
Yeah.
No, but I just am really into Mick's solo music, and it's you know what? It's refreshing though to hear a guy like Mick Jagger gets his heart broken.
Yeah.
It's refreshing.
Yeah.
So enough of that.
All right.
Mick Jagger. Okay, last night.
And
yes.
yesterday, we had this discussion. We were on our way to a party.
We have a couple stories from yesterday.
In Malibu.
Brett Cullen invited me out. I took you guys, I took you and Nick. And Nick, by the way, set everything up today. Did a great job.
Yeah.
He's got a new job. I'm really proud of him. That's great. Brett invited us out to see Chris Mulkey play, which, by the way, Chris Mulkey, we'll get to that.
That was great.
Great show. Great show. Chris Mulkey from Boardwalk Empire, Rambo, a million things, Twin Peaks.
Right.
He has a band, and they're a blues band, and he writes all his own music, and it's really fantastic.
Yeah.
So Brett invites us out, and we go to Malibu. It's like an hour away, and with traffic, it was like an hour 20. And we get there, and I order a couple cocktails, and Lee's got to go use the washroom.
Yeah, well,
So what happened?
I get into the stall, which, by the way, there was a line for it.
It was like one bathroom? 5-star restaurant on the beach, and they got one stall.
One stall. Well, this is Southern California, probably a lot of healthy diets, probably a lot of high-fiber eaters.
Yeah, but think you'd have more than one stall.
So I was unaware that in this part of the nation, it was not customary for when men poo, they do not flush the toilet paper down the toilet. There will be a waste basket, and in it will be the toilet paper that they've used next to the toilet. I could not believe this. It was so weird because it was so weird for that place. Because, I mean, it was a nice place. It was so bizarre. It was so bizarre that it actually was almost not gross.
I called a couple people and told them your story.
Uh-huh.
And everyone just kept saying,
"You did." They're like, "Why are you wasting my time?"
Well, they're like, "Are you sure it just wasn't somebody that decided, hey, I'm going to just toss it in the wastebasket instead of in the toilet?" But you're saying this was a wastebasket full of poop mittens.
Right.
Poop mittens everywhere.
It looked like, you know, if you were it was full. It was almost half full with that. It was some weird, like, little Rorschach test.
All right. I think we've got enough visuals on that one. Okay. Then another thing happened. So while you're doing your poop scoot boogie, I'm out front having a smoke because my only vice that seems to be left is cigarettes. So I got to smoke. I go out front.
Don't get rid of all your vices.
I'm not.
You're boring enough.
I know. Yeah, I'm turning into a real bore. I got like 10 fathers out here and like 5 crazy uncles. I'm turning into a very big bore.
Yeah.
So I go out front and have a smoke, and this guy walks out front. He's yelling and screaming. And I usually wouldn't like to gossip about other celebrities on the show or what have you, but it was a famous director. And he didn't know who I was, and I never brought up I knew who he was. And he's yelling the whole time about he walked out to go to his car to pick up some smoking utensils, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought he left the bill. They thought he wasn't going to pay the bill that he had inside.
Yeah.
And a guy came running out after him with the bill and told him he has to pay the bill or he's going to call the cops. And he's like, "Do you know who the fuck I am?" Blah, blah, blah. He's
doing his best Scarface.
Right.
Do you know?
Yeah. And it was famous director who I'll never work with, so I'm not afraid to talk about this story, is Jan de Bont.
Uh-huh.
Twister, Speed 2, The Haunted.
Right.
Okay. So he is just, because I smoke and he smokes. So he's like, someone I can tell about this too. And he's yelling at me for like 2-3 minutes about what like awful bartender. And he wants to get him fired. And he's like, "I know the owner. I'm going to get him fired. He didn't even apologize to me. He's so rude, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go back inside and I'm going to roll a joint on the bar. That's what I'm going to do."
Awesome.
And I'm like, man, you need to calm down.
Yeah. But what I think is interesting is that it didn't have to do with they brought his order wrong.
No.
It was they thought something happened. They accused him of being dishonorable. Like he sounded.
That's what he said. He goes, "My word is my word. If I tell you I'm going to buy something and pay for it, I'm going to pay for it. I was walking outside of my car to get something. That's all."
This is like what precedes a duel at dawn 20 paces in the 17th century.
He was very upset about his honor being. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it was.
Impugn my honor.
Yes.
He doesn't talk that with that heavy
accent. No, it's a very Americanized now accent with a hint of French.
Right. I'm still going to do
Pepe. Yeah, you just go all the way with it. And
this is an outrage.
But, no, I also wanted to, we had a great time last night.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Brett Cullen brought out Brent Spiner and his wife.
Uh-huh.
And Brent was Data from Star Trek.
Brent was the most British guy that is not British I've ever met.
Yeah. He's from Houston, Texas,
right?
You know, it's like, he's pretty regal for Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. They're all like, let's go lasso up some babes. And he's like, yes, let's go get a fine dame.
Yeah.
Howdy. Look at the set of yams on her.
Howdy, partners.
Yes, howdy, partners. And Brent,
that ass is so fine, it's a shame she has to sit down on it.
Brent's saying he's going to be on the show next month, so we really look forward to that. Tell him about the card we get from Brent. Brent's web show.
Oh, so he gives you a card.
Let me see if I got it on me.
All right.
While you talk, go ahead.
All right.
Nick's got one.
Hey.
That's why I love Nick.
So you say, what are you doing right now? And you in any projects, movies? He's like, a web series, actually. I go, oh, a web series. He's like, how far into it? Oh, about 5 episodes. He's like, well, I'll check it out. He goes, you'll check it out? And you go, yeah. And you don't lie.
No, I don't lie.
But he goes, you promise you're going to check it out? And and you go, and there's a pause, and you're like, yeah, I promise.
Yeah.
Out comes the card that says, read it.
It says, I promised Brent Spiner I would watch Fresh Hell, www.youtube.com/user/Fresh Hell Series.
That's great.
So
that is.
I'm like, this is the best card ever, well, next to Steve Martin.
He made mention.
You just met Steve
Martin.
I just met
Steve Martin. Yeah.
I mentioned that to him, and he's like, yeah, he knew about it, which made me go, oh, so he knows.
What I think is funny is that card, Brent's card, takes it a step further and demands a time commitment.
Yeah.
He basically gave you a homework assignment.
He basically told you promised me.
I know.
So you're going to hell
and we're having,
if you don't watch Fresh Hell.
And we're having him on.
Maybe
so.
Fresh Hell is about all the people that didn't watch his show but promised them he would.
Yeah, it's a case file. It's Unsolved Mysteries. Narrated by Robert Stack.
So I plan on watching it while Nick's at work. So when Nick comes home, we can work on some other things. And Nick's got the new job at Outback.
Yeah.
The steakhouse, man. Yeah. It's almost like a real steakhouse. It's halfway there.
I'll tell you something. I knew somebody who was a waitress there, and she was a waitress there for so long. They'd have downtime. So they'd be playing around in the kitchen just like messing with the food and trying to sauces and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they made every combination of things that you could put together there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That must be so much fun.
I got to tell you,
I've said that.
So far, I'm very impressed with Nick because he's got this new job and he's still doing like all the audio editing on our show and he's setting up our show. And like Monday, we got Dave Coulier on and he's got to run to Coney, set up the stuff.
Yes.
Say hello to Dave, be nice to Dave, and then he's got to run to work. And it's like,
there may not be time to be nice to Dave.
It's good for him, though, man. Yeah. It's, I'm telling you, all the hard work and shit, it's going to pay off.
It'll pay off.
It really does. I'm really proud.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about it. So, enough of that.
Enough of that. Back to poo.
Yeah, back to...
Right.
Yeah.
And we got Chris...
Wow, that one just...
Oh, God.
Ooh, it just carries and lingers.
Yeah.
I have no control over this.
Oh, boy.
It's just going. This is a... wow.
All right.
That just warns you, anytime a fart noise is called the long and winded road, or the long and winded road, I'm guessing, you don't want to click on it for brevity.
Right. That's my favorite Beatles song.
The long and winded road.
And you know what? That fart does kind of sound like the John and Yoko album they made together.
I got to tell you, we're going to have Greg Barson on in about 10 minutes or so.
Yeah.
And I got a million questions, and I feel bad because I got questions for him. Oh. I got a lot of questions about Jerry Lewis.
I'll tell you something. If any of our listeners have any Jerry Lewis questions.
Yeah, they should send them
call in. Send us to them.
Tweet them.
Send them to us. Send us to them.
Twitter.
Make us go,
Twitter.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to get questions. I know our booking agent, Pat Tobias,
yeah.
I know he's going to have questions. He loves Jerry. He
yeah.
loves him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to talk about many things, like what Jerry's up to. Like, I want to talk about the project.
How does he spend his days?
You know, I guess I don't care about that, but I kind of am when it comes to me and, like, celebrities, like, I don't really care what they do when they're not being entertainers.
See, I care about little things.
Do you? Like what? Like,
well, you know, cereal or oatmeal. Elvis or the Beatles.
So you want to know, what right. is Jerry's go-to
right.
breakfast?
Ford or Chevy.
That's great. And, you know, Jerry's still acting, man.
Yeah.
He's still acting. I got a lot of questions. I'm very looking forward to this. Like I said, we arranged a special show to do this because it premieres tonight, an hour after. Is it an hour after our show? It's 7 o'clock Central Time,
yeah.
which is 5 o'clock out here, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's literally right after our show.
What channel?
Encore.
Oh.
Encore. Mm-hmm. Encore is doing original content now. They all are. Cinemax.
Yeah, they have to.
Cinemax renewed Strike Back, and Starz has a couple series, and Boss got nominated for everything at the SAGs and the Golden Globes and
yeah.
Showtime and HBO, as we know. And I like Encore, though, because they do documentaries like this every once in a while.
Yeah.
And you catch them. They'll play them a bunch, and it's kind of surprising. And they come out of nowhere, and you're happy to see them because
yeah.
they do a lot of interesting stuff. They did a horror one not so long ago about slasher movies and the rise of them, though.
Right.
In, like, the 80s and all the crappy ones that came out and how they were, you know, how they were argued that they were bad taste and bad for the culture. And
yeah.
It was a really good documentary. It was. It was really good. I mean, it was very by the numbers, but if you're interested in that kind of stuff, it was a great beginners to intermediates guide on horror movies. Yeah. So, you know, it didn't do a lot of the down deep stuff, the B stuff, the European stuff. But if you like mainstream American culture, these kind of documentaries are great.
Yeah. And there was a thing with Stephen King where they went through. They did a thing on Stephen King, I think, on those channels, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it does premiere at 8 p.m. Pacific and Eastern time. So it's one of those deals where
yeah.
we get the delayed version.
Right.
I'm not too happy about that.
That's
but,
all right.
Well, but I steal my cable anyway.
Yeah, right.
What? What?
What?
Oh,
huh?
Oh, who said that? No.
Okay.
Look, we do a podcast on the iTunes and www.thematthewaaronshow.com.
We have to be
We're not rolling in it.
We have to be media savvy.
Yeah, oh, that too. That
yeah.
too. I was making excuses
okay.
for maybe or maybe not stealing
this
cable.
This is research. And the way I feel that we are entitled to
this is like our library.
This is our library. We have to do this for work, and we are already dollar menu-naires when we go to a drive through.
You know what just blows my mind? A show with as many listeners as ours, and you and I still got to eat dollar menu.
Yeah,
and it's like, man, no one just knows how to make any money in this podcast game yet, man.
No.
Everyone says it's going to be this $12 billion business, and everyone says there's going to be money in it.
Yeah.
And you and I just do it for fun. But at the same time, we're still eating dollar menu.
I know. Oh, believe me, I know.
At Trader Joe's today
yeah.
when you're crossing off half your list.
I did. I had to restrict it to oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy.
See, this is the stuff.
I could only get one box of mochi.
Oh,
do you know?
No.
Yeah,
one.
Absolutely. There, but for the grace of God.
Let me tell you something. When we went to stand up on Thursday, and you did stand up, and we're watching these other comedians and stuff. Like, this is the stuff people need to be talking about. They all go up there talking about Judge Wapner or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, talk about how poor you are, man.
Yeah.
Talk about like real shit.
Talk about real shit.
People care about that. There's two kinds of comedy. there's Jerry Lewis, who planned out great bits. But, I mean, these were well-written, well-rehearsed, great comedy bits.
Right.
And it wasn't really stand-up, you know?
No.
Then there's a great stand-up comedian. The key to being a really great stand-up comedian, and I want to call Ronnie if we have time later, because we had a very good conversation, I think, about Ronnie and Cigars and Stripes and
yeah, we did.
The training he gave us.
Right.
And, you know, people just need to understand, like, what people are going to remember and what's funny to people is stuff that is true most of the time.
Well, at least in movies, I mean, it was like in about 1997, mid-90s and all that, comedy was very much about ridiculous, absurd situations. It was all
sure.
like Farrelly Brothers and Austin Powers and things like that. And that stuff is funny, still is funny. Now I think I see a lot more things that are based on things that people go through in their daily lives, like Judd Apatow, and things that are based on like real situations. And have to do with people's reaction to them being funny rather
yeah.
than the situation itself. That's just in movies, but you left me hanging there. It's all right.
No, I'm listening. Okay. I just thought it was a good point. I didn't have anything to add to it, really.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
The more good points I make, the less funny the show is.
Well, yeah, I just think our generation is used to the type of comedy you're talking about.
Right.
And it's affecting stand-up. What's also affecting stand-up is, like I've discussed on this show, there's 25 comedians at every open mic. 22 of them aren't even, like, professional.
Well,
like, they don't have the voice. They don't speak into the microphone.
Right.
They go up there with notebooks, notepads.
I understand if you're just starting out, but... Like you,
and I do too, but you need to prep yourself at home even a little more before you do that.
Have gravitas. And jokes.
I think so. I think so.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm no comic genius.
No.
I screw up a lot. I am very unfunny. You've seen it. sometimes.
You've been pretty on lately.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. You've been pretty on lately.
No, but that was before. Now I'm a fucking...
Now you're hilarious.
Yeah, well,
so what is... By the way, before we...
But I meet comedians. I meet stand-up comics who haven't seen a Marx Brothers movie. I haven't seen W.C. Fields.
What do you mean?
Well, like they don't know those things.
Oh, yeah.
There's
well,
a lot of younger people, obviously, but they don't know their – dude, you got to study that stuff.
It's yeah.
Like, if you're, all right, they have stand-up classes, which I personally think are kind of not a good idea.
No, I think they're a terrible idea.
But if I was running a stand-up course, I wouldn't just have people and we talk and we'd have workshops. I'd give them all copies of like the Three Stooges to watch – and I would make them go home and I'd give them homework. I really would. I'd make them listen to, I have the Laugh.com series, which was a site that was set up by Carlin, put out albums about comedy. It's called On Comedy. Johnny Carson, narrated by them, one by Woody Allen and one by Carlin.
What did you Woody learn from all that?
So much.
Give me some examples. What did you take from it?
Oh, Just the mentality, Johnny Carson. You know why talks about why, how to look, the attitude. Carlin talks about his way of crossing a line in front of people, but bringing them with and having them be glad he did it. And it's so good to know that stuff. It doesn't. People just think like, well, that doesn't make me funnier. It does, but you don't see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't know the effect it has on
right,
you.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, it's like we were talking about at the beginning of the show with Jerry Lewis, and I'm watching Jerry Lewis films growing up. And you don't know that Jerry Lewis films are going to affect you.
Right.
But I'm 28 now, and I understand a lot more, and you're like, I could see some things even in my acting style and my writing style where there's a little bit of Jerry in it.
Yeah.
There really is.
You're always having pratfalls.
Yes.
And
physical comedy. What happened the other day? We're shooting something at Coney, and I hit my head.
Yeah, right.
And I sold it, too. I did the whole spinning birds
right.
and whoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Yeah, right.
You know, and
It should have been stars, though. You fucked
yeah.
that up. Well, Roger Rabbit style.
I like the birds.
Yeah.
I like the birds. The Tweety birds.
Birds are funny.
Because the Tweety birds, you can always like hit or something, and then there's something even funnier.
Right.
You can do shit with the birds.
Right.
Like, I'd take a bird and eat it.
You bite its head off?
Yeah. Yeah. Ozzy Osbourne style. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I like the birds. Stars, what do you do with stars? You just, you know,
yeah,
unless
stars,
they're ninja throwing stars that
yeah,
are twirling around your head.
Throw it at
then
you.
That's great. Just start tossing them. So Greg Barson's going to be calling in any moment.
Okay.
Director of Method of the Madness, Jerry Lewis's documentary on Encore tonight. It premieres at 8 Pacific and Eastern time. And if you have Encore, which I think most people with cable do nowadays, you need to check it out.
Encore comes with like HBO now. You know,
does
you,
it?
Yeah,
it comes with HBO, or
it's like one of those ones that come with the big channels. When
gotcha.
You get, when you get something, you get Encore also.
Gotcha. I want to thank Pat Tobias once again for coming to me with this interview and stuff because Pat comes to me with a ton, you know. But you know, and we have to turn a lot down nowadays because we're booked a lot Mondays at Coney, and then we have other things we got going on. But this is one I really wanted to do, and we have a phone call right now.
Yeah.
Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
It's Greg Barson.
Oh,
hey,
Mr.
Greg.
Barson, how are you?
My ears are burning.
Your ears are burning. Oh, you must know we're talking about you.
How are you guys?
I'm doing great. Let's talk about you first. And I want to ask you, what were you doing before you decided to do this documentary? What was your career like and stuff? Because I know this is your first major documentary, right?
Well, I did one prior to this about the legendary comic Phyllis Diller.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
2006, I think it was released. And that's on home video now. You can get that or on Amazon or whatever. And that's actually how, before that, I was a marketing and advertising executive at first, I was at Warner Brothers as a writer-producer, then moved on to Carsey Werner and had a big, long career in promotion of television shows.
Okay.
So that's how I started.
Yeah, so when you, what made you then, so Phyllis Diller was your first major project then?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so what made you so interested in doing that? I mean, obviously Phyllis Diller's a legend. That's a whole other interview right there that Lee and I could do.
Right.
But, exactly. What was your fascination where you decided, I'm going to spend this money, I'm going to go out and get the cameras, I'm going to go set up the meetings, I'm going to make this happen, I want to do a documentary? What made you get to that point?
Well, I reached a point in my career where I had learned all the skills to do something like this. I worked a lot in doing special projects where I was basically making kind of mini movies, mini TV shows all the time, even though with the promotions, some of them were three-minute pieces, and some were presentations about shows. Some were presentations for shows that didn't even have episodes. So you kind of made up the material as you went. So I kind of knew how to do everything, and I honed my skills, and I was always interested in being a filmmaker. And I was reading the LA Times one day, and it said, Phyllis Diller, legendary comedian, set to retire her act forever. So at that point, it was kind of like a light bulb moment, and I looked at my wife, Julie Ashton, who happens to also be one of the exec producers on that movie and this Jerry Lewis film, and she said, let's just go for it, follow your dream. If you want to do it, go for it. And she had met Phyllis Diller years before, just from an audition process or just through casting, and we arranged the meeting, went over to Phyllis's house, and beautiful house in Brentwood, and I pitched it to her as being something that I hope someday would get into some film festivals and be more artistic and show what she's really like, you know, behind the wigs and the makeup. And she got it right away, and she said, Greggy Pooh, let's do it.
That's great. That's great. Now, and so how do you then, you do a successful documentary there, and then let's talk about how you jumped from that to doing one with Jerry Lewis. What happened between the Phyllis Diller documentary's release and before you met Jerry that led up to that?
Well, it's a great question because the Phyllis Diller directly led up to it because the night I was shooting her final performance in Las Vegas, which I was busy, you know, it's part of the
sure.
big part of my film, Jerry Lewis happened to be in attendance in the audience, and he was sitting in a booth with his people, his, you know, entourage, and again, my cameraman, I heard him saying, JL's in the house, JL, and I didn't know what he was saying, Jell-O's in the house, I didn't know what he meant, JL, And I looked, I see Jerry Lewis sitting there in a booth. And my wife, again, Julie Ashton, she said, go meet your idol because you'll regret it for the rest of your life if you don't go say hi. So after the show, she took care of my crew, and I ran into the casino and kept going and hoping he was still there, kind of half hoping that he wasn't there so I wouldn't have to confront him. And he was there playing blackjack and winning money and losing money, and it was a big circus atmosphere around that table, you know, because you heard, you know, hi, and you saw people screaming, and I was, oh my, it was just intense. It was a surreal Jerry Lewis movie I was in the middle of all of a sudden.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So how do you work up the courage to introduce yourself to Jerry? What's that moment? How do you, he's gambling, for Christ's sake.
I know.
He's playing blackjack as Jerry Lewis, which
right.
is the best thing.
Are you, like, waiting for him to win a hand?
Exactly right. His son saw me and said, oh, you're the guy that they made an announcement. You were shooting the show tonight about Phyllis? I said, yeah. Come on, I want you to meet Dad. And I said, oh, my God, he calls him Dad. And I was like, okay. And I stood there, and all of a sudden I said, no, wait till he wins a hand. Literally, that's exactly what I said. And he did. He won a hand, and he elbowed me through. And he said, hey, kid, yeah, I love Phyllis. I'd love to see some of that material someday. And I gave him my business card. And literally the next morning when I got back to L.A., I got a call, and my assistant came running in my office and said, Jerry Lewis is on the phone. And I thought for sure it was my brother Mark, him joking. And he said, hey, kid, it's Jerry. Great meeting you. And I couldn't believe it. I almost fainted. I closed my door, and we talked for like a half hour.
Wow.
And yeah, and he was doing stand up on the phone. He was funny, and he would just talk. And that point on, it was I think like May 6, 2004. And now, you know, here we are, December 17th, 2011. That's when it started, in essence, because we spoke on the phone, like, say, every week, every couple weeks, that entire summer. And and I was trying at that point to get him to be an interviewee in my Phyllis movie.
Gotcha.
So that's how that happened.
So you carried on. Now, how do you carry on that relationship with Jerry? Because obviously this filming took place over a 3-year period, or the whole documentary. But then you said, like, you met him in 2004. So what was the process like to get Jerry to go from you want to interview him for a Phyllis movie to you want to do a whole movie about Jerry?
Right.
Like, how did that happen?
It's a big leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was crazy. The scheduling never really worked out for the interviewee part for the Phyllis movie. And in retrospect, I'm really glad that never happened because it just, you know, we didn't mesh. It just was like his schedule was crazy and mine was, I would have done whatever he wanted. But I'm glad that never happened because I saved the best for last. So it literally was on again, off again, whereas I was like a puppy dog with a bone. I would not let go of this. You know, I wanted the big fish. I wanted him. You know, he was in my sight. So I was busy finishing the other movies, so I got preoccupied, naturally. So, and got that all done and put it in festivals. But always in the back of my mind, I'd call Jerry, you know, every couple months. And, hey, it's Greg Barson. You know, he's like, I know who you are, kid. So I was always amazed that he knew exactly who I was. And it was incredible. And I kept saying, you know, well, let me think about this, Jerry. What if I did a movie, like I'm doing about Phyllis, about you? And he said, well, that's great. But get in line, kid. There's like 13, 14 other people ahead of you. And so I'm thinking Bogdanovich and Scorsese, you know, his friends.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a chance. It's over. And so I figured, what did I have to lose? You know, he said, they're getting in line, they're ahead of you. And I said, yes, Jerry, but they're not me. And it just flew out of my mouth. And he said, what did you say? And I was freaking. I said, they're not me? And he said, what you just said there, let's talk about that. I said, okay, sir. And he said, I like that. I like that you said that. You remind me of me. And literally that was the turning point. When he knew that I had that passion for it.
Wow.
And, yeah, and I would literally have nothing to lose, and he knew that I was serious, you know, I was sincere, and I was going to do anything to get it. And from that point on, literally, we started to talk about it. It took a long time, you know, scheduling and whatever, but that basically turned the tables.
What is the schedule? Give us an example of what the schedule is to document Jerry for 3 years. Are you there at 9 a.m. and leave at 9 p.m.? Do you set up certain days? Like,
are you sleeping on the couch?
Yeah. How does this? Are you in the guest house? Like, how does this happen?
Sometimes, you know, there's a lot of traveling. I'm in Los Angeles based, and he lives in Las Vegas most of the time when he's not on his yacht in San Diego. So there's a lot of driving and flying with my crew in vans and planes. You know, sometimes it's just like, hey, can you get here tomorrow? Something great's happening. Okay, you know, of course I'll be there. Or in other respects, it's like I get a phone call. This was in 2009 in the spring. He calls, hey, kid, how'd you like to go to France with me? I'm going to Cannes Film Festival. And I'm like, well, it's in like a week. He said, you can swing it. So literally I pulled it together. And I figured you can't make a Jerry Lewis movie and not go to France with him.
Wow.
Like, no matter what, you got to do it. So those things would happen all the time. And he's always tried to give me good fodder for the movie.
So Greg, what's it like being in France with the Jerry Lewis?
Incredible.
Tell me about Cannes. Yeah, I mean, we know the French. I mean, we love Jerry in America. We do. I think that's a common misconception. I think because we hear all the time how much the French love Jerry, that's saying we don't. We love Jerry, but the French love Jerry. So what is it like being in France with Jerry? What's that like? Is it like being with Beatle?
Kind of, yeah. And it's true what you said about, like, when you walk around with Jerry here in the United States, in Vegas, San Diego, wherever you are, he does get that same kind of reception that he does in France. I think it's kind of a misconception, like you said, it's been hyped up so much, the French. I think he really loves it there. He loves it there as much, and he loves the food. We ate a lot. I mean, his son Chris was with us, and he said, you should call the film Eating with Jerry Lewis instead. At one point, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have hours of us just eating and him just eating in restaurants. But some of the best, most candid things, if you use 4 seconds of it, it's worth it. You know, you just never know. When he does this Jerry Lewis shtick for you, it's incredible, and you just have to figure out what to keep, what not to keep. But the France thing, they do truly love him, yes, absolutely. But I think it's mutual, and I also think that it's kind of a fallacy because he gets as much love and adoration here in the States.
Yeah, I really think so. So what is like a unique story from you guys being in France? Did anything happen that was really out of the ordinary?
Let's see. We did a great press conference. He held a press conference. That was pretty ordinary.
Yeah.
Except he's never ordinary. You know, whatever he says is hysterical and funny and unexpected and surprising. He did a photo shoot where he gave the guy like 16 seconds. They had like Paris Match, a huge, it's like, you know, Time magazine here in the States. Paris Match was in his hotel suite, and it was like 10 people just to do a photo shoot. Here's, you know, it was crazy. You'll see it in the movie. And I thought it was a bit much, and he came in and he said, okay, you got 16 seconds.
I love 16 seconds.
Yeah,
I don't
he knew exactly how many seconds he needed them that they should need to get the shot because he knows about other people's jobs and he's done all this stuff. And I'll give you 16 seconds. And they were there setting up for like hours.
17 so too much.
Right. Time. I just imagine you're standing there going, all right, I've done this a million times. I took the average of this guy that did it and this guy and this guy.
He had an algorithm worked out.
He had a whole equation.
Right.
And they looked at him and like, okay, all right. And so they started shooting, and he's like, you know, did a very straight, nice smile. And he said, he looked at me in the corner, from the corner of his eye, said, hey, Greg, look, they'll never print this. This is what they print. And he started spreading his legs and making faces and going, hi. And he's right. Then they started shooting like crazy. And he was putting his legs in the ear, pulled his shoe off, was making believe it was a telephone, and doing real, real vintage Jerry. And that, sure enough, that's what they used. Those are the shots they used. So he knew what they wanted, and he knew when he was going to give him those 16 seconds where they could shoot their frames, and that was it. And he said, are you through? And he said, yeah. He said, good, because I am. And they just all burst out laughing, and they had their shots. So that was a great, great thing to learn. You know, he knows what he knows, and he's right.
Now, I got to imagine Jerry was acting and taking maybe some gigs here and there while you, during this 3-year period, did you have access to watching Jerry actually at work?
Yes, he was doing concert tours, live stand-up. So that was, I was in heaven, because that's really one of his things that I never really saw him do live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen him on TV and movies, but to see him do live concerts and to see how the audience reacts, I was so fortunate. And you'll see it in the film. He, you know, we behind the scenes totally, he gave us full access, putting on his makeup in the back and talking to the owners of the casinos that want to come and say hi to him. And these, you know, two young guys, he couldn't believe how young they were. And they, like, ran this casino. He's like, oh, my. They look like kids to him, and they were kind of young, but they left the door, and he's like, where's the money? They forgot the money. You know, because you're expecting them to give a check before the show. It was just hysterical. Whenever you're with him, you don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. And to have that opportunity to be with him before he went on the stage live, and then to jump into his dressing room afterwards, and, okay, tell Greg to come in. Well, we'd sit down and just talk about that performance and his work ethic, so... It was truly fascinating. That was the greatest thing, to be able to see him perform live and how the audience reacts. And he does great Q&As during these concerts where they put two microphones up, one down each aisle in the auditoriums, in the theaters, and people just line up, like way, like huge, deep lines, and he answers all of their questions. And he does about 45 minutes of his acts are Q&As, all spontaneous, obviously. And it's pretty amazing, and there's a lot in the movie which is just totally hysterical and spontaneous. I have so much left over. It's going to be great stuff for a bonus material on DVD.
Now, Greg, when Jerry's doing this live concert, can you do your best to explain what a live concert experience with Jerry Lewis is like?
It's pretty incredible, because he's sitting up there on a stage. He stands, he has a stool, you know, it says Jerry Lewis and his signature on the back. Everything's very Jerry, you know, it's like, and he's got at least a 35-piece orchestra, which most comedians don't have, you know. So he's got this, and he rehearses all day with them, too, by the way. He knows every instrument and what they should play and how they should play. And he treats the audience to, like, a slice of his life. He starts his jumbo screens and shows old clips from the old Colgate Comedy Hour with Martin Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in between act, and, you know, like, he does a few jokes, sings some songs, sings old Black Magic from the Nutty Professor, and they go crazy. And then he put up a clip in between it, a clip from a classic clip, which is great because you get a whole full Jerry Lewis experience. And then he'll come back and do more jokes and then Q&A. So it's a really packed show. It's not just a guy standing up there with a microphone. Doing stand-up. He does that, but he does so much more, and the audience is really grateful. And his work ethic is to treat every performance as if it's the last, and if it's, and no matter what the venue is, if it's smaller, larger, whatever, you treat it like gold, and then your audience respects that, and he respects the audience. I was at one of the shows, we had a complete blackout, a power failure.
Oh, wow.
Everything went down. And I was very upset for him. I was very upset for my film because I didn't get, you know, the normal 6 standing ovations at the end of the show that I needed because it was totally black. And he handled it so professionally. He screamed. He had no mic. He went to the edge of the stage, cupped his hands together and said, everybody, please stay seated, because he didn't want anyone to get trampled, whatever. He's concerned about the audience safety. And you could hear them screaming, we love you, Jerry. We love you. We love you, too. Then everyone kind of rushed the stage because it was kind of like a little mayhem, and started pulling out their camera phones and phones and just shooting pictures of him while he was on the edge of the standing there. It was surreal. And the way he controlled the audience and just kept them all calm and happy, and he's like, these two Jews, you know, and they just laugh, you know, what do you do up there? So he waited and waited until eventually the power didn't go on and thanked everybody. But he was about 10 minutes short. And he said to me as we were going into his dressing room, I said, are you okay? He said, I'm a little upset. I said, why? He said, because now I put my best stuff at the end of the act. I had the killer 10 minutes. He said, from now on, I'm going to do my act backwards. So that way he knows.
Wow. Yeah. That's when you know you're working with a great entertainer.
Yeah.
Like when you can control a room like that in a situation where there is a blackout. Yeah.
Totally. No, nothing. And it was just him on the stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
In the dark.
I got to ask you, I want to promote this flick a little bit here that's on Encore tonight once again, 8 o'clock Pacific and Eastern time on Encore. Once again, Method to the Madness. It's the documentary Greg Barson did about Jerry Lewis. And you have a lot of A-lister comedians in this film talking about Jerry. And, like, how easy was it to get them to talk? What did they have to say? What can we expect to hear from people?
Well, it was so cool to get this cast, if you will, together, because you have a wish list, and then you go down the wish list and you realize that it's coming true. You know, you never think that you'd get it, but my God, when you get Billy Crystal, you know, showing up to do an interview and talk about Jerry Lewis, it's almost surreal, because he grew up with him too. And once these people started talking about Jerry, you could see that they go back to that place when they were younger and they first saw him. Because I always started off with, what's your first recollection of Jerry Lewis? And once they start thinking about it, you can't help but smile and think about your childhood and when you first discovered him. And how much that he truly has meant to these major A-listers' careers and lives, not just their career, but their life, that they would be super fans. And you don't know until you start. You know, you don't know that Quentin Tarantino, I was shooting him in his home theater, which is gorgeous, by the way.
Wow.
And when the movie was over, he said, Greg, stay right here. And he ran into another room and he pulled out a Cinderfella album that he was saving for years just to show me. And he had, these people really get it. Spielberg, we shot at DreamWorks in his headquarters, in his office. And he was so gracious, and he felt, you know, Jerry was such an influence in his life. He just was so busy. He was doing War Horse and, you know, Tintin and doing the Lincoln movie prepping, and he took time out to do this because Jerry meant so much to him.
I was going to ask then, Greg, is this you calling these people up, your producers, or is Jerry pulling some favors, or how do you get these people to agree, like take time out? Is it, and obviously they love Jerry, but is it because you had just this unrestricted access to Jerry, or what?
I think it was, Jerry never got involved with that, like who to use or making any phone calls to get any talent. The only thing that Jerry would ask is he wanted to thank the talent afterward.
Wow.
So he'd call them or send them a note when he found out who I interviewed, and was very gracious and would call them and say, thanks for helping the kid out. But he didn't want to do it beforehand because he didn't want to put any kind of extra stress or whatever on that person, knowing that he's involved in any way, you know, or would call and thank him, which was great. So it was literally me just going after these people, and luckily my wife happens to be a great casting director in Hollywood, and she does a lot of comedies, and Julie Ashton, and she's the exec producer of this movie as well, one of them. And so that doesn't hurt, you know agents' names and this and that, but it was still a lot of digging and just pounding on doors, and knowing, you know, a lot of Jerry's history doesn't hurt me, you know, to right. let them know that I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And they realize that, you know, this guy's not going to go away. They keep coming back until they say yes.
Well,
but it's all scheduling. It's all like scheduling. When they're that big, you know, they're out of the country, they're doing huge movies, so you just wait.
Yeah. Lee, do you got,
well, yeah,
you got some questions for Greg?
I was just going to say, this really seems to, I think a lot of people who aren't as familiar with Jerry might regard him in this way of being just not accessible. But what I think is good about what you've done is that you kind of pull back the curtain show. Not only is he still working, which is pretty respectable enough, but he's actually highly accessible. He's doing tons of things still, even that he's not doing the telethon anymore. He's still very much active and on his game, and it really kind of changes your perception of it, you know. And he's been in entertainment his whole life, so he can totally be guarded and live and do, you know, just retire if he wanted to, but he doesn't. I think it's great for people to see that. I think
that's
such a great aspect of what your project shows.
It's true, and I love that older people like him still care so much. Like Phyllis was exactly the same way. She, not exactly, but very similar, that they don't phone it in. You know, like if they're going to do a concert and they're 80, she was 84 when she retired. He's 85. He's doing gigs. I just heard in February in Vegas.
Yeah,
so he's not retiring, and he's working on scripts all the time, and he's, you know, he's got his fingers in everything.
Right.
I think that keeps them, you know, that they don't phone it in and don't take their audience for granted or their craft. And I guess that's why they've done it so long so well. You know what I mean? I guess there's a lot of younger stars that could learn from that.
Right, I know. I mean, you when you're doing it that long, being able to retreat and not do stuff anymore is just a luxury afforded you.
Exactly.
And Greg makes a good point. He goes, a lot of younger stars can learn from that, which makes me wonder, Greg, what did you personally and what do you think these people you interviewed took from knowing Jerry Lewis? Not just from watching him, not just because we talked earlier in the show about how I grew up watching Jerry Lewis movies, and I'm 28, and I feel very fortunate that I was able to do that because I think subconsciously it affects who you are as a person when you really like someone's work a lot. So what is it that you and everyone else took from this project, and you especially?
Well, for me, you know, as a kid, I'm older than you guys. I'm 51. I was born in 60. So he already had his peak, you know, with the Martin Lewis peak, but I didn't have any idea he was going to peak even greater in the 60s with Paramount and his huge $10 million contract that he got. So I was, you know, I was watching it on TV at like the 4:30 movie, you know, that kind of thing. I was in the theaters. I started discovering when I was like 5 or 6 or 7. And I would watch everything when Jerry was on. You know, I'd try to fake being sick so I could stay home to watch him. And my mother, you know, she would say, you know, you got to stop with this Jerry. And I said, well, she couldn't understand it. She said, I like him, but I said, you're going to be...
Look, buddy, I think you've had enough.
Yeah, it's like enough. She said, you're going to be either a TV genius or a bum when you grow up. And I was like, thanks a lot, Mom.
That's what my ma used to say, too. She's like, I wish your homework was based off a television program.
Right.
You'd be an A-plus student.
And she met Jerry for the first time a couple weeks at the premiere at Paramount. And I think she conveyed that story to him. And I'm like, Mom, you know, it's Jerry Lewis.
Okay.
Tell him I'm going to be a bum.
Right. Greg's mom's like my mom. This is great.
Yeah.
Like, you wanted to introduce your mom to... You're a mama's boy like me, I could tell. You wanted to introduce your mom to Jerry. How big of a moment was that for you? And what's your mom's reaction?
Incredible. I mean, it was an incredible moment. I have a great picture of the three of us. I have to send her. I still didn't show her. But it was just wonderful. And it meant the world to me because she just saw... You know, I have a 5-year-old son now who loves Jerry because he's watching me, you know, edit from years in, you know, in my office. It's Jerry Lewis, that's Jerry Lewis. And he's watching him on the typewriter, he's mimicking him. So for her to see, you know, me at that age, to remember how I was at 5, 6, 7, growing up, and for her to see this thing come to fruition, full circle, where I actually grew up, met him, made a movie about him, and then I'm standing there hugging him in a picture in a packed theater after he just got a standing ovation, and I did for the movie. Surreal beyond belief, and it'll take me a while to come down. I don't know if I ever will.
What Jerry movies do you plan on showing your son as he grows up? Like, what are the staples for you?
And when do you do it?
When do you do it?
I don't think he's ready for Disorderly Orderly.
Well,
I'm going to wait on that one.
Maybe the errand boy, or,
right.
You know?
Yeah, I think, well, he's seen so many clips from all of them in my movie. He was sitting with me in the edit bay when I was actually doing my final quality control check before I shipped it to Stars. It was just me and him in an edit bay and my editor, and you just press play, and you can't take your eyes off the screen. You know, you're looking at everything for the 50th, 60th time watching it. And it was just me and my son, and I said, you know, you're seeing this before the premiere, before anyone sees it. He's like, yeah, Daddy, I know. And just watching and the whole thing. So to me, it was a really great bonding moment. But I would say The Nutty Professor is a bit more mature. You could watch these movies, and you get different layers out of it. So you're not going to know, like, Buddy Love and then Professor.
Right.
You know, you're not
going
to worry.
There's a lot going on
right.
in Nutty Professor.
Right.
It's deeper. So, you know, I think I'd start him off with probably The Bellboy.
Yeah, The Bellboy.
Bellboy.
Right.
Yeah.
And he has
For me, it was Sailor Beware. I watched that with my dad on AMC back when AMC used to show things that were in black and white.
Right. And I mean, I don't care when you were born either. Like, you can enjoy Jerry Lewis's work because, one, it is still funny today, but two, the guy has such an energy on a movie screen that I think one of the only people that can compare nowadays is maybe Jim Carrey. Like, he has that much energy. Like, Jerry just, you know, to the point where people thought he was like a little schizo sometimes, right, or whatever on screen, you right. know?
Totally. Billy Crystal says in the movie, he had just a different energy than anybody else did
yeah.
at the time. And I think you could even add to that, that anybody else ever did, not yeah. even at the time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think it's been unmatched up till this point. I mean, I think Jim Carrey's close, but I think Jerry Lewis just had this energy and still does. I mean, he did an episode of Law & Order SVU, which I don't know if you were filming during that time or not, but he was incredible.
He was incredible. I wasn't filming at that time, but obviously, you'll see, Richard Belzer is in the film.
Yeah.
And he's got a Jerry tattoo on his arm, for real. He went and
wow.
had a tattoo of his head. And the last time I saw him, he extended it so he has all the way up to his upper torso, like to his waist in the tuxedo. And he says, "Do you think I should do the whole body?" So I told Jerry about this, I think I ruined the surprise. I think Belzer was going to surprise him, but I slipped it out or whatever. And I said, "That's how big of a fan he is." And Jerry was like, he laughed. And he said, "If he was really that, a really big fan, he'd have a tattoo on both his arms of me."
So
Jerry style.
I'm very happy to now know that Richard Belzer's lost his mind. That's
right.
Good. Hold on. We have a phone call that I'm going to take. Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who are we speaking with?
Yeah, my name is Michael. I was fortunate enough to be at the screening in L.A., and it was an amazing evening. I was wondering if you could ask Greg to speak a little about what I think was Jerry's greatest contribution to film that very few people know about, which was the invention of the video assist.
Very good question. Michael, did you have a good time at the screening?
Are you kidding? I'm still downloading all the pixels. It was in a... you know, and processing all my reactions. I mean, hanging out not only with you and Jerry and Phyllis and, like, you know, Woody Harrelson and other great people in the business that were there. It was very magical.
Thank you. He's got a good point. I mean, Jerry, people don't even realize that he invented a lot of the techniques and equipment that are used to this day, and people just take it for granted. The video assist, like Michael said, is something that Jerry came up with because he had this great thought about, what if I want to direct me? He calls himself Jerry or the kid or the idiot. He always talks about himself as that character. So he had a very big dilemma. He was about to do the bellboy, and he wanted to know how could he capture the image of himself and look back at it, because, you know, in those days you had to send the film out for processing, and you still do, and I don't even know how long it took back then to get it back, but at that point in time, you just had to trust the camera operator. So the director had to always ask, did I get the shot? Do we have the take? And they say, oh, yeah, move on. We got it. Looks good. But the director really didn't see it, and they just trusted this dude who said, yeah, we got it. Who knows if he wanted to go to lunch? You never know. So Jerry said, I'm not going to direct myself until I could see what Jerry does. And he came up with, he thought about maybe putting a still camera, like a Polaroid or something, next to the video camera. He's like, no, that won't work. You know, I still have to get that film, look at it, and the scene's done. So he thought about getting a video camera and putting it right next to the BNC, to the film camera. And he went to Japan and met with the chairman of the Sony Corporation, Mr. Morita, and he happened to be a friend of Jerry's because he had a dystrophic child, and Jerry was helping him out big time, and so he felt, you know, this guy would do anything. He was indebted. So Jerry flew over and talked to them, and for months they did sketches and worked it out and basically came home with his test gear, and Jerry called all of his crew in because at that point, you know, he was a big star, and he could just phone his crew whenever he wanted, and he got them in there, and they all looked at this equipment, hooked it up, and it worked. They actually were able to monitor themselves, and they put huge monitors, probably about I don't know if it was 9 or 10 or 12 around the set of The Bellboy. So wherever Jerry was directing and he was performing, he could just turn his head, glance in a monitor, because it wasn't videotaped back then, guys. So
right.
he had to, like, monitor himself, you know, like, okay, if I'm moving left, I'm moving right, I can see. And he was able to perfect his comedy that way and direct himself. So major, major, major change in every television show and every film today. Virtually everyone uses that video assist now. And, Michael, good question.
Michael,
yeah,
may I ask you a question, buddy?
Sure.
What has Jerry Lewis meant to you, man? Like, you said how special his screening was and everything. What? Tell me your Jerry Lewis story.
Well, I do actually have a Jerry Lewis story. It's funny you should ask. When I was in junior high school and I was just starting to get interested in journalism, I happened to go to a convention in Miami Beach where I was going to school, and it was the AFL-CIO convention, and President Johnson was going to be appearing there. But Jerry Lewis was also there to receive an award. And I was credentialed at that convention as the youngest reporter at the convention. But basically, I just wanted to get out of school. And somebody from AFL-CIO said, hey, let's get Michael with Jerry Lewis. And so they took a picture of me and Jerry together. And, you know, I'm in there in my corduroy suede jacket and my turtleneck and looking all cool. And Jerry, of course, looked the height of his ultimate 1960s dapper style, you know, with the slick back, black hair, cigarette in the hand. Uber cool. And so they took that picture, and when I went back to school, I gave a copy of the picture to my advisor of the school paper and said, hey, check this out. I got my picture with Jerry Lewis. And to my surprise, the advisor put the picture in the paper, and when the next issue came out, and there I was on the front page of the paper of my school with me and Jerry Lewis, I was suddenly a celebrity at my school, and I thought, wow, you know, I can get into this journalism thing. And it actually started me on my career as a writer in eighth grade, and I'm now a writer and a producer. And it was because probably of Jerry Lewis getting me all the attention from the cool girls in school. So I really have to thank him for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry, for getting Michael laid.
Right.
Well, not in junior high school. I was more like maybe a kiss. Not in junior high school. I mean, that was a while back. We didn't really
Jerry's
get
job.
That lucky then.
Sorry, Michael. Kids nowadays, I just don't know anymore.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking 1967.
Oh, that's a great story. That's a great story, man. I'm very thankful you called in, Michael. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Enjoying
Thanks, Michael.
All right.
Take care.
Yeah, I mean, look how much of an impact Jerry's had.
You know, everyone I talk to has a story. Like, if
everybody.
Everyone's, you know what happened? I met Jerry. Oh, I did this. Every person. Crazy.
I've never met Jerry, but, I mean, my story is I fell in love with Jerry with the telethons.
Sure.
We didn't have cable at my grandparents, and they were on 24 hours, and I watched a lot of WGN, and I'm like, gosh darn it, the Cubs game is not playing today because of this marathon, and I didn't know what it was, and I was a young kid, and then I loved it. I loved it. He had on all these great entertainers. He was entertaining, and it was a really great thing they were doing, and I didn't really understand what muscular dystrophy was when I was that age, and I didn't really understand the effect he was having on people, but I knew something special was going on. I knew that this was the only thing on television like this, and I was watching it, and it was Jerry Lewis.
I never watched it, like, really sat down, but I would have it on, and I was younger, and I'm like, how does this guy do this for so long? It's like 23 hours. How is he still having this? I was just marveled at from that standpoint.
I'd have to have 10 Red Bulls.
Right.
Yeah.
they didn't even have Red Bull back then.
No, they didn't.
Yeah. And let me ask you, Greg, how did you keep up with Jerry?
That's a good point. A lot of Red Bull. He drinks a lot of orange soda.
Really?
I told somebody, I think maybe that's the fountain of youth.
Oh, you know, right. Lee was talking earlier. He's like, I want to know what Jerry has for breakfast. I want to know what kind of soda he drinks.
I had a multitude of, like, little questions. Like, is he cereal or oatmeal? Chevy or Ford? Elvis or Beatles? You know.
He does like food, and he eats a lot of gourmet food, and he likes Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh,
you never, and it's the original recipe.
Yeah.
No, extra crisp. Extra crispy is gauche.
Yeah,
exactly. He knows what's good. He knows what's good. So he does that and a lot of sun-kissed orange soda.
Orange soda.
I love the orange soda
Like the island tribe in Joe versus the Volcano. I love that.
So, Greg, what's this going to do for your future? What's upcoming for you? What's next?
Well, I've been asked that a lot, and I'm going to take a little time off to revisit and remind myself what my life was before this and with my family. And then after that, I'm going to probably start thinking about who can top Jerry, though. You know, it's a very difficult – if you have suggestions, because I'm kind of racking my brain on that.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
Mike Myers is really going to have to buckle down.
You know, they got to get older, so I got to wait a while.
Right.
I mean, maybe not so much of who's going to top Jerry Jerry being a legend, but maybe what's going to be as interesting of a topic.
Right. Well, we don't have, and this is because society is different now. We don't have clowns anymore. We don't have people who have every muscle and limb in their body at their beck and call to be physical and energetic. There are people. There are such people. Jim Carrey is such a person. Steve Martin has that ability.
Martin Short.
Yeah, totally. Right. We have those people, but it's not to that level. We don't have the clown. And is that because we live in just a more, less fun era? What do you think about that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know
what
you're
Clowns, there's more of an innocence to that, and that's why Jerry transcends language and countries, where Cal Burnett in the movie says, you don't even have to know what he's saying. It doesn't matter what he's saying. It's in his eyes, it's in his face, it's in his actions, and he's just funny. So it's like in his DNA, you know, like Richard Lewis says, oh, Jerry's in my DNA, meaning him. I think any comic today, Jerry's in there. He's in there because you don't even know you're doing him or something that he's created or something that is very Jerry, but I think every comic has him in there. And the ones that know that, it's rare that you know. You just do it. You just know that he's in there. Mm-hmm. So he's been around so long, he became comedy. This is strange. I mean, there's some singers that have done that, but Who can you compare, like Streisand or Elvis? I mean, he's that. He is that. And so when you're asking me who I want to do next, and I think you're right. I can't think of it in those terms as a person. It has to be like a situation.
It has to be something like Chappelle and Eddie Murphy. They've been away from comedy for so long, and now they're both trying to do stand-up again.
Right.
What's that like? You know, there's interesting things out there in stand-up still.
Right.
And you need to find, I look, I mean, if you've covered Phyllis Diller and you've covered Jerry Lewis, doing something like that should be real simple for you.
You're right. And then I have somebody say, what about doing Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner together?
See, that would be great.
That'd be great.
That'd be great.
I would watch that.
Hanging out and talking, going to lunch with them, talking to them.
Do you see more projects like this in the future where you just get to hang out with comedy legends?
I hope so. Because
that's why he does them.
Yeah.
That's really the reason. That and the chicken.
So what, you and Jerry did you ever get KFC together?
He eats the KFC and I'm working. I'm usually just shooting it, eating it. You know, I'm working. But he also likes lollipops, Tootsie Pops.
You gotta share a bucket of chicken together. That's gonna be your moment.
God.
You need to share a bucket of just one bucket, a little romantic.
Yeah.
Together of KFC.
No
the
grilled,
Colonel's original recipe.
No grilled.
Original
no,
recipe.
Yeah. No extra crispy.
You get some baked beans.
Get some
mashed and gravy.
No wedgies.
No wedgies.
I just say wedgies.
We have shared champagne. That's for sure.
Right.
Jerry
and
may be giving Greg wedgies.
Yeah. Wash it down with champagne.
Yes. That we can do.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. I mean, Greg, I got to tell you, man, I'd love to have you come. You said you're an L.A. guy, right?
Yes.
Well, we do the show from Coney Dog, Mike Binder and Sam Raimi, Adam Sandler, Tim Allen's joint on Sunset.
Uh-huh.
You should come sit in sometime and talk to us about Phyllis Diller and Jerry Lewis and
your new
project.
Your new.
Oh, I'd love to.
Tell us what it was like to interview Jonathan Winters.
Yeah, I just think it would be great. And,
yeah.
And I mean, and I'd really like you, if you could, just tell Jerry from Lee and I, he's been a legend, an idol to us, and I love his innocence, man, and I love a lot of things about him. Just, he's the best. He's the best. Let him know.
I definitely will. I will. I'm going to talk to him. I talked to him this morning. I'll probably talk to him later tonight or tomorrow morning. And he's aware of all the love he's getting, and the press is, you know, we're getting a lot of attention, and it's fun, and it's when you work so hard on something like this, and then to finally sit back and get ready to watch it tonight with your family and friends, it's a thrill, and I definitely will stop by and hang out.
Yeah, and I just, you know, it's just important for me. Like, I'm just so happy to have discovered Jerry, even at my age, where, you know, yeah, Lee and I are pretty young. Lee, you're 28, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm 28, and, you know, I just want Jerry to know we're writers, actors, comedians, and we're going to be taking the torch and passing on the Jerry Lewis brand, the style. We love him.
That's great. He would love to hear that, because he is a mentor.
Yeah, that's great. We love him, and thank you so much, Greg, and I wish you the best of luck with this documentary. I mean, it's already a success. It's on Encore tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific and Eastern. And, yeah, we'd love to have you come sit in.
Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure. And thank you, guys. I will do that. I'll take you up on that. And you guys are so much fun, and I can talk all night long if you want. But I got to go watch my own movie. Well,
great.
Right,
thank you, Greg. Greg Barson, Method of the Madness, Jerry Lewis on Encore tonight, 8 p.m. Pacific and Eastern. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Greg.
That's Greg Barson.
Yeah.
There you go. So you can watch that tonight. I could get into another hour about Jerry Lewis.
I wanted to say, you remember when he got the Lifetime Academy Award a couple of years ago, Jerry?
Yeah.
And I, like, we were all, I was watching with my family, and they were like dreading some big, awful speech. And he got up there and he was just like, this is a great honor. Thank you very much. And that was it. I love that. And like newer, young actors, like, he didn't start blubbering. We're semi plugged in now to the system, so I'm not going to name names, but like, they're just like blubbering and babbling. And like, he didn't do that, man. I love it.
Yeah. You know what I love about Jerry is he's somewhat played the Hollywood game, but kept his dignity and kept his pride while doing
dignity,
it.
Dignity, always dignity.
Am I wrong, though?
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you know,
that's what. Here's the thing. I want to abide by that, but I think dignity, always dignity, you know, from Signet and the Rain. But I think for us, it would replace the word always with the word never.
I even want to play a little clip of Jerry's. I just don't know which one I really want to play. I love so many. You want to hear Don Rickles? I so much want to play that one.
Greg, if you're still listening, please do a thing about Don Rickles.
Maybe that's your next.
Don Rickles or Jonathan Winters.
They already had Mr. Warm.
Mr. Warm.
And Jonathan Winters' movie came out this year.
Right.
And it was supposed to be terrible.
It was. I didn't see it.
It was supposed to be really bad.
Well, it was like a story.
Yeah,
I don't want that.
I don't understand that at all. How about Jerry Lewis answering phones? This seems funny.
Front boy. Stanley, take over for a few minutes, will you? I'll be right back.
The bellboy. Jerry Lewis. I just love this scene because all Jerry does is answer phones.
Right. You're the one phasing the screen on me. That's
okay. I know.
Sorry.
I hate doing this because we're on the radio, but it's a great Jerry moment. It's a scene. I just want to talk about it anyways.
Physical comedy on the radio.
Yeah, but it's this scene. I want to talk about what makes Jerry so great, and it is his physical comedy that's a part of it.
Right.
And what makes this scene so great is Jerry doesn't have tons of dialogue, barely any, right? And he gets summoned to sit at the front desk, and he's answering the phones. And he doesn't know which phone it is because there's like four phones.
Right.
So he's picking up and hanging up all of them,
right.
And he's moving all the papers around. He doesn't know what's what.
There's,
it's just so funny.
There's one scene at the end of Nutty Professor at the school dance where
yeah.
he's standing there as the character and he's just dancing. He's just like dancing. It's just a 20-second shot of him like trying to dance, a nerd trying to dance.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing
and,
this
yeah,
move.
Right, right.
And then,
like, it's so funny and it's yeah. completely pointless. It has no relevance to anything in the story. But it's like I always laughed at that part.
But
remember
that's
that?
What made Jerry so great is he didn't even need lines to be funny.
Right.
He didn't have to say anything. He had that face and that energy, and you just felt like, I don't know, you felt like a kid every time you're watching him, man.
Right.
And I mean, that's what's so great about Jerry Lewis is you feel like a kid every time he performs.
Yeah.
Like you just laugh.
Yeah.
And it's great. I really, like I said, I really appreciate Pat Tobias for setting up that interview with
yeah,
Greg.
That was good.
I thought that was really good.
That was worth having another day of poverty for me, not working.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad. And I hope Jerry just knows how much it means yeah. to everybody.
I thought, did you kind of think that caller, that might have been Jerry?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm not sure. Like, I want to give Jerry all the credit in the world, but I know how my mom is with the internet.
Right.
So I don't know if Jerry's Mr. Internet Savvy.
Well,
could be wrong, though. He could be Mr. Google.
Yeah.
Jerry Google.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be his next film. He can play Jerry Google.
He can be the head of Google.
Because that sounds like a last name for a Jerry character in a movie. Google.
Yeah, right.
Jerry Google.
Was that your Jerry? Was that your best
no,
Jerry?
No, that's my worst Jerry.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's probably my only Jerry.
Right.
So. I do want to talk about our – do we have anything else we want to talk about? Do we want to do some news? Do we want to
do
anything?
Some news. We were going to talk to Ronnie, maybe.
Oh, that's
but,
right. We have so much to do with the 39 minutes.
It's all right. Whatever.
You know what I did want to talk about is six badass jobs.
Oh, yes.
That you can have right now, little to no qualifications required. Mm-hmm. Number six, bounty hunter.
Yeah, I'm not –
I guess you can just, in reality, you decide to become a bounty hunter, you are now a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Like, there's no certification, no qualifications. If you want to be a bounty hunter, just say you want to be a bounty hunter,
yeah,
and you are.
I hate to take this to PG-13 show, but fuck that job.
I think that's a little more than PG-13.
Yeah, no, but, like, seriously, I don't like average people turning vigilante and turning each other in. I hate that, actually.
Sure.
I despise it.
Sure.
I don't mean to get all...
No, yeah, we talked about this earlier, and you are taking a funny bit and ruining it.
Yeah,
that's sure.
Right.
That's great.
No, I know.
Real good. You're supposed to do your dog impression.
Right.
And talk about everyone you want to arrest.
Right.
Whatever. Number five. Martial arts instructor.
That one I love.
You don't need a black belt or a trainer's license.
All you need to do is
be me.
Is be Joe Piscopo.
Yeah.
Or that guy. What's that? That was Sidekicks. What was the guy? What was the actor in the Cobra Kai dojo leader?
In
Karate
the one Kicks? I saw in Burbank.
Yeah.
Oh, what's his name? I'm gonna look up the
Sweep
actor's
the leg.
Name. Yeah, I'm gonna look up his name.
Okay.
Because I saw him in
don't
Burbank.
You, but see, that's the thing.
And I'm like, oh!
Don't, a karate instructor, don't you need, like, to be a karate...
Martin Cove,
okay.
John Creasy.
Don't,
remember, he played John Creasy.
Right.
Creasy. You know, rhymes with greasy.
Yeah.
Oh!
What, don't you need to be, like, good at karate to be an instructor or not?
No.
No,
I don't
not
think
at all.
Not what I'm being told here.
Okay,
but I have another job for you. You know, you want to get a kick-ass job, Lee? I got one for you. This is one Mikey Turzo and I have talked about numerous times because we've had to stalk people down to be friendly with. So, any Hoosiers?
Oh boy!
When
less said the better.
Private detective.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to – I think there's a short course online, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It takes like 2 weeks.
Well, all you do basically is just watch people to see if they're cheating on their like spouse.
I love
that's
that.
All
and
you
I want to be in that business.
You don't solve cases.
I'm Richard Dreyfuss. You're Emilio Estevez.
Yeah.
We're in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you on that. This is my favorite.
Where'd
though.
You put the diamonds, baby?
This is my favorite, though. Number three.
Wasted two perfectly good slugs for the 45.
Lee, would you like to be a hazmat worker?
Yeah, that's great.
You know, it's
that's
carefully...
like saying your body could use a little asbestos.
Well, if you go to the hazmat site, when you go to the hazmat site, it says in quotes, "carefully trained." It's a 40 hours on the job training and a high school diploma mm-hmm. is all that's required. How carefully trained does that sound?
Mm-hmm.
Nick's getting more training at Outback.
Right.
A steakhouse trains you more than 40 hours.
40 hours.
Oy, oy, oy. I love that one.
Hazmat. And then they have...
No one saw Outbreak?
They have to hose you down at the end of it, you said.
Naked. All the
naked.
Time. Naked. People are staring at your small weenie.
Right. Isn't
all
that,
the time.
Isn't that what they used to do when they thought people had been poisoned by radioactivity in the 60s
yes.
when they didn't
yes.
know?
They set up the big tent.
You couldn't just wash radiation off your skin.
Yeah. They set up the big tent.
Right.
Yeah. How about this one? Ice trucker.
Right. I love that.
You do love it,
yeah.
even though you think you'll die doing it.
Right, right. Ever dream of dying on TV, like in Deadliest Catch?
Well, here's what I was told. Ice trucking companies are so desperate, they'll hire anybody. Anybody.
Right.
They'll teach you, they'll get you the license you need, and they'll hire anybody. Because, like you were saying, what were you just saying about how deadly it is?
Right.
And that's why, like, no one will do it.
Right.
So I don't know how badass of a job that is, but
okay. Yeah.
This list needs a little work, if you ask me.
Right.
I don't know if telling ladies I'm a hazmat worker is going to get me laid.
What if you had to drive an ice road truck in a hazmat?
That'd be great.
Right.
That'd be great. I'd still never get laid.
Yeah.
Here's my favorite. The
you know
last
what, though?
One.
You're just as likely to get beaten to death being a private detective.
Yes.
If your tail finds out you're tailing them, it could be as dangerous.
That's true. Not if it's me and Turzo, though.
Yeah, right. Turzo's the muscle.
Right, right, right. So this last job takes a couple weeks for certification, and it's to be a bodyguard.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
28 days, it says.
28
days.
And you, too.
And you don't need any previous security training.
No. I told you, I early on I worked as a bouncer. And no training required, and I'm like 5'8", no muscle tone.
You're the Katherine Heigl of bouncers.
Yeah, right. yeah. Brittle.
Yeah.
Not
talent.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, not.
Oh, God. Okay.
Bitchy.
Wait a minute. Hang on. I hear doors shutting.
Whoop.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I'm just kidding. We love it. Oh, come on.
Come on.
Who didn't like 27 dresses? Stop.
Right.
I'm trying to. Well, we like Knocked Up. We talked about that the other day.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Well, that's life as we
Isn't
know it.
Isn't she married to some singer, some guy? Life
uh-huh.
as we know it. Why do you have to say things that are just going to make me open my fat trap?
I don't know.
When I should keep it shut.
Because I have a fat trap, too. When I eat, it goes right to my mouth.
You are shocking our audience today.
I know. I like how you got people from Married with Children audience to be on the show today. The late... Yeah.
They didn't like that comment.
No, they didn't like that comment. No. I feel like, remember there was a point on TV when they started, like, I feel like it was okay to use the word Hooters. And so, like, every episode of Married with Children had the word Hooters in it, like, from a certain point on.
And then every time they said Hooters, it was like...
Right.
Oh, no, that's every time a girl walked in on Bud.
Yeah, right.
Like, a girl walked in and said, hey, Bud,
hey,
how
Bud.
You doing?
Right. Some bimbo. And then like you had the feeling like, okay, this is so not made in Chicago.
Right.
There are no women like that.
Whenever they walked in the strip club.
Yeah, right. Right. Caught him with a blow up doll again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And then you know what I wanted to play for you that you will absolutely love? Whoopi Goldberg did something on The View yesterday.
Yeah.
You know I'm always up to date with my view
update. With your view, yeah. What you know what? Say what you want, but people watch that show because of her that they normally wouldn't.
I watched
maybe
it before for Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah. You're a big Rosie fan.
I do. I like Rosie. Look, I never have to agree with a person to like them. And I like Rosie. I like that she's very open and proud.
Yeah.
I don't mean just about her being gay. I mean just about her opinions.
Well, the show was nominated for a Golden Globe. You were nominated for Best Actress. Yeah,
now,
several Golden Globes.
Just listen and tell me if you know what happened.
Talks about our experience post 9/11, and it, our identity was really quite.
By the way, this is Claire Danes with Joy Behar, Sherry Shepherd. What's her face? Who I don't know. I think Barbara's there, and Whoopi. So
okay.
Here we go. Here's Whoopi's about to do something.
Okay.
On live TV.
Questions, and I think it explores that in a really smart way.
Excuse me. I just blew a little frog out of there.
Was that what I think it was?
One more time for you.
One more time for the kids at home.
Smart way.
Okay. Okay, listen.
I think I just blew a little frog out
We might be lowbrow on the Matthew Aaron show, but when we get a sound effect, we get it from the best source available.
Yes, The View.
Yeah, The View.
Yeah, so Whoopi just let her rip.
Let it rip, yeah.
I love that she admits it.
I thought that, yeah. No, Whoopi wouldn't. No. Listen, I don't know her. I hear she's
Whoopi's
cool.
Whoopi's like, shit, I farted.
Yeah, yeah. She would cop to it.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
I love that clip. Oh, man.
No, be a man and admit that you did it.
Yes, and Whoopi. Yeah. But Whoopi stepped up. She was a man.
Yeah, I know.
She stepped up.
That's why Whoopi is cool.
Yeah, she's cool. And Joy just sat there, like, trying to ignore it at first.
Joy had to take
it. She was dying.
I want to know what Barbara's reaction to it was.
I guess that was one of Barbara's off days.
Yeah.
You know how she's like there some days and not others. But we were talking about Barbara last night, and she said something to the Kardashians.
I hope she one cheek sneaked it on Sherry Shepherd.
Oh, no. Sherry was sitting across the room. She did one cheek sneak it.
Uh huh.
But it didn't work out.
I'm not going to get started on Sherry.
Oh, look at this. Star actor is really fugitive criminal. Do we want to know?
Is it RQ?
It is. Oh. No, it's Zhang Gufeng. Chinese actor is fugitive criminal caught by police. That's not a star actor. That's in Asia.
Okay.
What do we care about Asia? We're a big hit there.
Yeah, right. We are.
playing whatever.
The French love us.
Yeah,
we're underappreciated.
Oui.
The Matthew Allen show is very funny.
I'm looking for some.
It made sense to surrender. The Germans were very mean people.
NBC plans Betty White 90th birthday bash.
Okay, can I say something?
Please.
Betty White being like a dirty old lady, you don't know what she's going to say next. You know, she's like kind of wearing thin a little bit, maybe.
No, not only that. But,
and I like the Betty White. Okay, don't get me wrong, but that Snickers commercial that opened the door, man.
No, I totally agree with you, and I'm getting a little tired of NBC.
Does anyone know that she's been like around? Like she's been in like there, I saw movies made in the early 60s called Advise and Consent. It takes place in the like in the Congress, and she's
well. The show was nominated for a Golden Globe. You were nominated for Best Actress.
Why is this Whoopi clip playing again? Come on, I'm done with Whoopi.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah,
sometimes our soundboard. You know, see Nick's not here. No one's here to do shit for me. Okay, hold that.
We're sitting in the dark now, by the way.
Here's another great Whoopi clip.
Not because it's dark out, but because we don't have any lights in here.
Here's the other Whoopi thing I wanted to play that's just great.
How many of you?
They're with Dr. Oz.
Does she belch?
How many of you passed gas already since you've been on?
Okay.
Okay.
They're with Dr. Oz.
This is so.
It's Whoopi, Barbara, Joy, Sherry, and Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Okay.
This is
Can
so.
I just say something?
Yeah.
just because we're talking about farts now on daytime TV doesn't mean that's okay.
Well,
Dr.
Oz
almost
talking
worse.
About it.
It's almost worse like when you hear your authority, like your parents talk about sex, it's like not cool. You think it would be because they're being open about it, but it's like, I don't want to talk to you about sex.
Well,
please.
Let's see what Dr. Oz has to say.
Okay,
you're criticizing before you hear.
Okay.
Here, come on.
I am not raising my hand. Because there is more room out than in.
There we go. I love that.
There's more room out than in, says Whoopi about farts.
Oh, Whoopi.
Wait a minute.
Yes?
Yep.
Come over here.
Whoopi just farted again on live TV.
All right.
This, and people say our humor's lowbrow.
Right. This woman, keep in mind, farted on live TV and walked off on Bill O'Reilly that one time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's my
so
favorite.
That, yeah. You don't. Yeah.
Oh, Whoopi.
Okay.
Oh, Whoopi.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now, Whoopi.
Oh, Whoopi, please.
Yeah, calm down before we change your name to Skidmarks.
Yeah.
Skidmarks Goldberg.
Oh.
Oh, I just love that clip. I just love that Whoopi now farted on Barbara Walters. Like, if you saw Barbara's face in this clip, she jumps into Dr. Oz's arms because Whoopi sneak a cheek towards Barbara and went, yep.
Everybody farts, though. You know, like that book, Everybody
Absolutely
Poops?
Absolutely,
even
everybody
Barbara
farts.
Except Barbara's felt probably smell like air freshener.
Yeah.
I think. She's Barbara.
I do want to talk about our next show. Dave Coulier will be joining us
Monday?
From the Coney Dog on Sunset.
Your favorite
West
Full
Sunset,
House Uncle?
8873 West Sunset Boulevard. Yes, your favorite Full House Uncle, but also very talented comedian.
Yeah. Man of a thousand voices.
Yeah.
And does he still have his website, cutitout.net?
I believe so, and he also has a web series going. And he also is writing a script, I'm told. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about, but
okay.
He's doing a lot of work. And Dave Coulier, Uncle Joey, Joey Gladstone will be joining us on Monday, which I'm looking forward to. So cut it out, Mr.
Dot
Woodchuck.
Net.
Yeah, dot net.
At least that was the last I heard. That was his website.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm just Dave Coulier is funny, man. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. We met him at Coney Dog, and it was like one of those things where you meet someone who was on a show like Full House, and he's like making dirty jokes and stuff, and it messes with your head. Like the first time you heard that how dirty, how foul-mouthed Saget was.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's messing with my head.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to pretend like I'm cooler than that. The first time I heard Saget be dirty, I was shocked.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to be
That's the kind of thing I would expect from Stamos.
Do you want to hear? Pat Tobias just sent me something.
What was that?
I was going to stop the show early today because I just feel like we have a show Monday, and I feel like we did a really good interview, and maybe leave it at that.
Right, before we put our feet in our mouth.
But Pat sent me 10 amazing Facebook facts you probably don't know or don't care.
Okay.
Do we want to hear them?
Either this or the news.
The average user has 130 friends.
Hmm.
Okay.
I got more than that.
So do I. Over 20% of users have been dumped via Facebook. 25%.
All right.
A June 2010 survey of 1,000 Facebook users, 70% of whom were male, found that 25% had been dumped via Facebook.
That makes me physically ill.
Yeah. Terrible human beings.
You cowardly, weak. All right, go on. Keep going.
No,
I'm
going to
get
go
off
ahead.
On
go,
yeah,
go,
no, 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 go.
Go.
No, next one. Go the next
go!
One. No.
Look, I mean, if you're dumping people on Facebook, you're a scumbag.
You're a scumbag.
You're complete shit.
Right.
Yeah. I have no respect for you. Facebook does not allow breastfeeding photos. So you cannot put a photo of your kid sucking your titty on Facebook. I love how I just turned into Red Fox. I don't know.
Yeah.
Your kid sucking your titty.
Sucking your titty.
On Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, please. Do you think Red would, if he was around, do you think he would be throwing out the word Facebook? Do you think he would,
No. He'd be like, you can put whatever you want on that thing, that book thing. Yeah. With, I just want a kid sung a titty on the book. That's all I want.
Right.
I love Red Fox. there's a pro breastfeeding group. Okay, in response to the terse notices alerting mothers that they were violating Facebook's decency policy.
What is it with the breast? Why do you...
Lactivists responded with lactivists.
Oh, God.
That's not even a word.
Oh, God.
Responded with a virtual nursing. 11,000 women posted photos of themselves breastfeeding or updated their profiles to read, hey, Facebook, breastfeeding is not obscene. The pro-breastfeeding group has attracted over 250,000 members.
Okay. Could women maybe not take it out on us when we want to look at your breasts and stare at them, and you're doing that?
Look.
Could women maybe make up their minds about how they want their breasts to be regarded?
Lee and I have talked. I'm this close to gay.
Yeah.
Like, I see one more breastfeeding photo.
I'm
going to be hanging out with Rick Taylor on
Saturday
night.
The public breastfeeding thing, I'm ambivalent about it. I think they should have the right to do it.
But I don't want
to
see it.
Well, no, here's the thing.
I don't.
I think they should have the right to do it.
I agree,
but
I hate it.
But I also think that it should be up to the business to decide whether or not individually they want to allow it.
Yeah, that's true. You got to remember,
that's the libertarian in me.
Facebook's a private business.
Right. It's a private business.
Yeah.
It's also a thing that people can get on for free.
See, people think
I feel
they
like if they
own
charge,
Facebook,
if,
though.
Right.
You don't own it.
You own shit.
You are allowed to use it, and all those ads you see on the side.
Facebook takes what you post and markets to you based on keywords in your thing. And it's free. If it charged money, I would say yes.
Yeah, if it charged you money,
right,
then I would say, well, you're paying for a service and you can't post a titty feeding photo.
That said, I don't really give a shit if women are breastfeeding in public. I really don't.
See, I just think it's hilarious that they're offended they can't show their breasts getting sucked on Facebook. But if I call it titty feeding, I'm a terrible, shitty human being.
If it's a grown-up man sucking it, big problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you put a kid in front of it, sacred, beautiful, true. Hands up. Yeah.
Facebook causes 1 in 5 divorces.
Stop hiding behind your a child. Stop hiding your breast behind children.
1 in 5 divorces caused by Facebook.
That's sick.
It used to be the telltale lipstick on the collar. And then there were the giveaway texts that spelled the death knell for many marriages.
Yeah.
But now 1 in 5 divorces involve the social networking site Facebook, according to a new survey by the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. A staggering 80% of divorce lawyers have also reported a spike in the number of cases that use social media for evidence of cheating.
Do people just live their entire romance life?
To be stupid.
But on social media, don't people just go out like they used to and lie to women and put roofies in their drinks like the old days?
No, it's not like the old days. No, but the truth of the matter is, how stupid are people?
Yeah.
You're going to cheat on me on Facebook?
But I'll tell you something. Lots of people meet people online through sites like eHarmony.
Yeah, but
stuff.
I spy on people on Facebook who I'm not dating.
Yeah. that's for another show, Matt.
Oh, sorry. Some things I can't say out loud.
No.
Al Pacino was the first face on Facebook. Remember that sad-looking blue guy on Facebook's homepage like 6 years ago or whatever who used to stare you down every time you went to log in?
Uh-huh.
That was Al Pacino.
Wow.
There you go with that. So
your computer performed an illegal operation and must be shut down.
I've never been on Facebook.
I like it.
30% of Facebook, 36% of users.
I sent you a vampire request.
See, this pisses me off. This is the one I hate the most. 36% of users check Facebook, Twitter, or text after sex.
Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah!
Did you hear me, or are you still doing a terrible impression of Al?
It's not that bad of an impression.
It's pretty bad.
Okay.
You've had better.
Yeah,
you've had better.
That's right.
36%.
I got to brush up on my impressions if I'm going to go toe-to-toe with Dave Coulier.
You don't have a chance.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
How would you feel if your woman just starts texting everybody in the world on her phone after you guys have sex?
Here's how
and you know it's not about you.
All right.
Let's say it's another guy.
Listen, there's a difference between being sexist and having a fucking code of honor.
Yeah.
If I'm on a date and the girl is texting during it, done deal. Done. And she's, because you know she's texting about you, all right? And that's crazy. And a guy who does that too, that's as bad. But yeah, used to be people lit a cigarette. Remember you lit a cigarette after sex?
Right.
I did that one time, and I don't smoke. I have asthma. It just felt like the right thing to do.
Well, look, I mean, it just pisses me off because...
Now I'm all hyper.
I had a girl once who I was seeing who afterwards did text and was texting her best guy friend.
You know who wouldn't Facebook and text after a sex?
Jerry Lewis.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Damn right.
Yeah, Jerry Lewis.
And Greg.
But they'd still do the cigarette.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what you know, like the best guy friend on top of it.
Yeah.
You might as well have just, you didn't say to me the sex sucked, but you're saying it to me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like you didn't say it, but you're saying it. By texting some dude right after we have sex, you're saying to me, I'm no good.
It's just so piss-anty. You know, when did we all become a bunch of little kvetching wash women?
We've just all be, you know, this is something I've noticed lately.
Just,
and it has nothing to do with L.A., Chicago.
People are probably texting and Facebooking about this conversation right now.
Yeah, probably. I don't think people anymore try to be good people.
No.
That's really what is, you know what's hurting this country probably more than our government is, because it's hurting our government.
Social media.
Is that we're not being good people.
No. It's all this stuff, but see, this is the theory I have. All the stuff was set up to bring people together, and it's doing the precise opposite. When people get their phones and all that stuff, and the phone with the internet in them, and people don't even care. It doesn't make them happy. They complain about it. How many times have you heard said, I hate my new phone, it sucks, and all that stuff?
Yeah.
And it's doing the exact opposite, because this stuff trains people to think of themselves as separate entities.
I agree.
It like
everyone thinks they're a brand.
Right, right. They're a separate – it cuts us off from each other instead of doing the precise opposite.
Over 350 – this is number seven. Over 350 million people suffer from Facebook addiction disorder.
Yeah.
I think I'm guilty.
That's sick.
So we're going to skip that one because I don't want to hear how awful I am.
Everybody – listen, everybody who is, I think they should be required to go camping.
Yeah.
I think camping will nurture you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Needless to say, without –
How about number eight? Facebook users have lower grades than non-users. According to a new study by doctoral candidate Aaron Karpinski of Ohio State University and her co-author Adam Duberstein of Ohio Dominican University, college students who use the 800 million member social network have significantly lower grade point averages than those who do not. The study made in 2009 surveyed 219 undergraduate and graduate students and found that the GPAs of Facebook users typically ranged a full grade point lower than those non-users, 3.0 to 3.5 for users versus 3.5 to 4.0 for their non-networking peers. It also found that 79% of Facebook members did not believe there was any link between their GPA and their networking habits because they're egomaniacal. Oh, I added that last part.
Yeah. I was going to say, I wonder what the reaction of those people would be to results that are probably they would describe as so ungood.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they're saying. Yeah. There's. Yeah.
Took you a second. Right.
No, I liked it. But that's what they're saying when they're saying 79% are like, well, this study's bullshit.
Right.
No, you're bullshit.
Yeah.
You're the bullshit.
Yeah. God damn.
Number nine, Burger King gave away free burgers to users who unfriended people on Facebook.
Awesome.
I love this.
I love it.
In January 2009, an advertising campaign from Burger King titled Whopper Sacrifice rewarded Facebook users a free angry Whopper for publicly deleting 10 friends who would then receive a blunt message informing they were deleted for a free hand. hamburger.
And that's
the campaign conceived by Burger King agency Crispin Porter and Bogusky and executed by Refresh Partners used the tagline, "Friendship is strong, but the Whopper is stronger."
Wow.
At press time, the application had been downloaded more than 55,000 times and over 250,000 friends were sacrificed.
Awesome. And what does that say about you if you got dropped for an angry Whopper?
Yeah, that just makes
an angry Whopper. That's the sandwich that they chose to represent this campaign.
And by the way,
a regular Whopper that got angry. It had a temper tantrum and the cheese turned into jalapeno cheese.
By the way, they're saying the limit was 10. Let me tell you something, people. I have 1,200 Facebook friends. 1,190 of them would delete me for a free fucking angry Whopper.
Absolutely.
So
I know a few.
Yeah. We do. So look, I mean, don't think. Oh well, I never got deleted.
They should have taken that further. You get a month free Burger King if you delete your Facebook entirely.
But everyone's sitting back listening to the show, going, "I never got deleted," and I'm like, "I'm just gonna remind you, you were number 11."
Yeah.
How good does that feel
did you delete did you delete anybody?
No, I haven't done it yet.
Are you not a Whopper fan?
No, I love the Angry Whopper, actually. I'm a big fan of the Angry Whopper. I shit fire when I have it, but
yeah.
I love it. I love how we're ripping on Whoopi, by the way, for being a farter. Well, we were defending her. But, like, we just talk about our shits freely on this show and our bowel movements. We're like a couple old broads talk show.
Here's the thing. We don't even know that we do it. We keep coming back.
Yeah, we don't realize it until after we say
it. To flatulence and excrement.
But we're like a couple old broads that have a talk show.
I know.
This is why old women listen to our show.
No, they don't.
Think... Yeah, we have old women that listen to our show.
You think Phyllis Diller is listening to
Not
the show?
Not that old. Okay. But I love Phyllis. No, she's too good for our show.
Yeah, you're right.
No, but I think like we probably sound like the people like a couple 60-year-old broads who have, you know, now they're opening up about their flatulence and their menopause.
Yeah. And we'll say, you know what, we're just taking our cue from Whoopi. All right.
And number 10, a man was arrested for openly asking his 13-year-old daughter for sex over Facebook. Ready for this?
Okay.
On perhaps one of the worst crimes perpetrated in Facebook, a Pennsylvania father was arrested for allegedly asking his teen daughter for sex over Facebook. John Forehand, his last name is Forehand.
Oh, God.
That's just too good for this. 39, referred to himself as Bad Daddy in the online correspondence with his 13-year-old daughter, in which he openly propositioned her and made explicit sexual suggestions. Forehand told his daughter he had been having inappropriate dreams about her and wrote to her, "I'll take very good care of my little girl." The girl told her mother about the inappropriate Facebook messages, and she then alerted the police. The police captured Forehand by tricking him into coming to what he believed would be a meeting with his daughter.
It was John Hansen there.
So there, yeah, right, Chris Hansen.
Yeah.
So there is your
him too.
Yeah, there is your
the talk soup button.
10 Facebook things you don't know, and one really ruined it.
Yeah, boy, what a dour note to end on. I hope his team made it to the Final Four.
Oh, and why do you have to be a Pennsylvania man? What is going on in that state, man?
I don't know.
What is going on in Pennsylvania? I got friends and family in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
They're normal. What is with everyone touching everyone's wee-wees?
It's always horny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. That's great. Pat Tobias just messed it. You know, Pat never calls in anymore. When's the last time Pat called into the show?
Yeah, and was on the line for like an hour while we were bullshitting.
That's probably why he doesn't call in anymore.
That's probably why. He's got a life of his own.
All right, well, we only have a few minutes left, so we'll just wrap it up by talking about Monday. Dave Coulier from 4 to 6 Pacific time. No, yes, 4 to 6, and then we got a film with Bert afterwards.
Yeah.
I do want to tell our audience, Lee and I are going to be in a short film directed by Bert Binder.
Mike Binder's.
Sure, his offspring.
Talented son.
Offspring, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
looking forward to seeing that final project, but we are going to be shooting again on Monday after the show, so we have a full night of work ahead of us on Monday.
Yeah.
I really want to encourage you to turn on Encore at 8 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Pacific time. It's very important because it's the method to the madness. It's the Jerry Lewis documentary, and Greg Barson was fantastic on our show, answered every question. I mean, even when we made suggestions that the media thinks of Jerry, you know, sends out bad messages about Jerry, Greg was very professional in handling all of it, and he was great. He was a great guest.
I have to say, we were fairly professional. That was a very positive.
Well, you know.
I don't want to pat us.
You know what the problem is? Like, I just had flashbacks to before the show, and Pat Tobias is like Jerry Lewis, and I just had flashbacks of being a kid.
I know. I was thinking about watching
Jerry.
Grandpa's
house, and yeah.
And we watched The Caddy when I was a caddy in Illinois. We watched it. It was on the
So I mean, there was nothing in my mind other than positive things and positive thoughts. I didn't want to get into the muscular dystrophy drama. I didn't want to get into the other things. Yeah. And Jerry has been a profound influence on comedians. Well, at least the talented ones everywhere,
or the smart ones.
Yeah, or the smart ones. And I think Jim Carrey's probably said it before, and I'm sure he can attest that he owes probably quite a bit to Jerry Lewis, and
which is fine.
Yeah, which is
good.
Great.
Yeah.
Which is great. So, Dave Coulier on Monday from Coney Dog on 8873 West Sunset. You can come out and join us live if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can call us live at, I don't know, it's like 424-222-5205. But you got the number if you're listening, if you see it. The documentary premieres in Chicago in 6 minutes, Pat wanted to warn me. So it's on Encore. Go watch it. Have a good night. Lee, anything?
No.
I got to shit anyways. I've been waiting 2 hours. That kid takes an hour shower. I gotta go.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good night.
Remember to light a match because I'm next.
Ladies and gentlemen, have a good night.
All right.